Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Voice of Indie. Your hosts today are Beam Weeks, author, producer, and marketing monster for independent multimedia publisher Fresh Air Group, and Stephen Jeeves, author, producer, composer, and publisher for Fresh Ink.
Good evening and happy Wednesday, everybody. Welcome to Voice of Indie, the Voice of Indie podcast, show number 26. And I am your host, Beam Weeks, and with me is my co-host, Stephen Jeeves. How are you doing tonight, Stephen?
Hey, just excited to be here. It's been a nice, warm, sunny day, and it's a beautiful evening, and I'm expecting to see some stars tonight. I don't know which movie stars it'll be, but whatever.
Lucky you. I mean, we've got cold weather, we got snow, and the cool thing is it's staying light later, so that's always a sign that spring is right around the corner, and I'm looking forward to that. So, we've got a different show tonight.
Yeah, we've got the usual. Hashtag Fresh Ink Group over on Twitter if you want to get your comments or questions in.
Yeah, and also, if you would like to join the conversation, which would be really cool, give us a call at 516-453-9902. That is 516-453-9902, and we will talk to you on the air.
Now, if we wind up saying anything interesting, I wouldn't bet on it, but if there's anything interesting and you want to go back and hear the show again or send your friends and family to listen to it, you can find it over on freshinkgroup.com under the podcast tab. Where else can they find it, Beam?
They can find it on the Fresh Ink Group YouTube channel. Just go over to YouTube and type in Fresh Ink Group and we will pop up. And while you're there, don't forget to like those videos. Watch all of the ones that we've got there because there's some cool videos as well as all of these old episodes. And subscribe to the channel. We are trying to build a solid fan base here or a listener base or, you know, whatever. And do some really cool things through that. So get over there and subscribe and listen. And you can also find these episodes at StephenGees.com and BeamWeeks.com. So there are plenty of places to find it.
Now, those last two author sites that he mentioned for Stephen Jeeves, which is me, and for Beam Weeks, which is him, those are particularly relevant this time because those two authors are today's guests.
Woo-hoo.
Yes, today's guests, we're going to interview each other.
Yeah. Yeah, we thought we had some indie musicians lined up, but that kind of fell through. So, so we had been talking about doing this. We've got a couple of really cool ideas for episodes coming up, and this was one of them we thought maybe not so cool, but, you know, this is our show, and we've never been interviewed on it, so why not?
Yeah, normally we do pre-interviews. We do pre-interviews with our guests and get to know them and their work and talk about things and then kind of put together an outline of topics we'd like to see if we can get time to get to, but in this case, we already know each other's work. We've read each other's work. We helped make each other's videos. We don't have commercials for all of our own books, though, something we noticed today. We've made 70-something of these video trailers for authors, Fresh Ink Group authors mostly, but we only have a few of ourselves. Still, we're going to subject you to the commercials that we have for our own books.
Yeah, so this is basically a free-for-all. There's no outlines, no notes. We are just winging it tonight. And let me just kind of squeeze in here a little thing about the indie musicians. We're trying to get more either bands or individual solo artists to be on the show where you can promote your music, you can talk about your works in progress, your recordings, what you're working on right now, when the time comes, tour dates, things like that. So we'll be searching for more musicians since the ones fell through. So, you know, if you're a band or a singer or a musician, we may come calling. So keep your ears open. Now.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. I was just going to say now, let's get on with the show. Let's get this thing rolling.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm eager to meet these guests.
We're going to start by reading a bio for each other. And I've got them out of order on my little sheet here.
I see that.
Beam Weeks is an author, editor, blogger, blog talk radio host, and video producer for Fresh Ink Group. He has written many short stories, essays, poems, and the historical fiction / coming-of-age novel titled Jazz Baby. He is a maven of pop culture and a die-hard fan of music. Heavy metal foremost, but unashamedly likes a wide variety of musical genres. He is a lifelong native of Michigan.
All right, and that's where you're supposed to say, welcome to the show, Beam.
Yeah, welcome to the show, Beam.
Stephen Gies grew up in the Detroit suburbs during the American auto domination. He earned his undergraduate and master's degrees at the University of Michigan Arbor. He retired from scripting, producing television shows, composing, producing television music, then expanded his small literary management firm into indie publisher and multimedia company Fresh Ink Group. Now he works from a deck overlooking the lake in North Alabama, helping other writers share their compelling narratives with the world. So this is going to be kind of cool, I think.
So welcome to the show, Stephen. Thank you.
Welcome to the show, Ms. G. We've been hearing about you for quite a while, and we just had to get you on.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so let's get this thing going. We're going to start out by rolling a commercial for one of my books called Been There, Noted That.
All right.
Fresh Ink Group presents from author Stephen Gies, Been There, Noted That, essays in tribute to life, observations, inspiration, remembrance, and noteworthies to share. The simple lives of everyday people in a mundane world prove extraordinary in this collection of 54 personal experience essays by novelist Stephen Gies. The eclectic mix of memoir, commentary, humor, and appreciation covers a wide range of topics, each illustrated by artists and photographers from the Fresh Ink Group. Many of these essays have appeared in other book anthologies such as Chicken Soup, or in popular magazines, newspapers, websites, and the author's site, www.stephengies.com. Some appear in this collection for the first time. Some pieces may resonate in ways that touch you deeply. Others might well remind you of people you've known and loved. Some convey direct messages you might want to pass along, such as appreciation for friendship, birthday wishes, and graduation congratulations. Several explore remembrance, a way to share our search for meaning as we grieve. From cautionary tales to poignant pokes at our uniquely human foibles, Gies catches what many of us miss, then considers how we might all share the most poignant of lessons. Been There, Noted That aims to reveal who we are, examine where we've been, and discover what we dare strive to become. Been There, Noted That, Essays in Tribute to Life, is available worldwide in print editions and ebook editions, including iBook, Kindle, Nook, and more. Been There, Noted That is proudly published by the Fresh Ink Group.
All right. So first off, as commercial there said, this is a collection of essays. These are personal stories that are based in truth, and they're all written by you, and they're in this collection. Tell us about these essays. Where did they come from? And you know, what motivated you to write these, and, you know, kind of, I guess, make it write down a history of these events and whatnot.
Well, I guess this goes way back, when I was writing my first novel, Dance of the Lights, available worldwide everywhere in lots of formats. While I was writing Dance of the Lights, I was getting the Detroit Free Press. And the Detroit Free Press back then had a Sunday magazine in it, one of those little paper insert kind of magazines. And the last page in that magazine each week was a personal experience essay. And I looked forward to reading those every week. Some of them were funny, some were poignant. They're all by different authors, different author every week. And then I read one that really, really stood out to me and made me feel something. And I thought, you know, I've got a lot of stories. I could write a few of those. maybe send them in, get published, you know, make a couple $100. Turns out it was only 75 each, but, you know, getting published when I was still working on my first novel was pretty cool. So I just sat down and made a little list of topics. Some of them were stories about relatives of mine and some of the crazy experiences we've had. Some were experiences that I've had traveling. And I just kept collecting these over the years. And usually I would send them in someplace, and more often than not, they would get published. They landed in places like Chicken Soup for the Soul books and newspapers and other magazines and a couple of other anthologies. So I wound up organizing 54 essays into categories. One's Noted Young, which is about childhood experiences I've had. One's Noted Kinfolk, some of the crazier people that I'm related to. You can see where I get it from. Noted Traveling, stories that I've had going out traveling. And then Noted Around Me, just things about everyday life that I noticed. And then I wrote a few called Notes Under Notes to You, which are birthday wishes, congratulations for graduation, but then include poignant stories in them that I think have meaning. And then I did Remembrance, because I've lost some family members and some people who are close to me, so I wrote a few of those. And then I ended it with a category just called Noteworthies and put a whole bunch of different kinds of things in that. I really enjoyed doing this. And then figuring out how to organize them and put them together was quite a challenge and had me reliving all of these great experiences.
Speaking of the experiences, share a couple of these. What can readers look forward to when they purchase this and crack it open? I've read this, and it's been a few years, but these were just some amazing stories because, first of all, the way you write, it puts you right there. So you're right there in the scene, in the moment, and you know, so you feel like you're part of this. And there's, from what I remember of reading this, this has probably been 6 or 7 years since I last read it. But, I remember that connection to it because there's things in there that we're all familiar with. I mean, it's whether it's childhood or family. You know, coming together with, you know, friends when you're young and, you know, carefree or whatever, there's something in there that you can connect to. And that's what I found was so cool. So tell us about, pick one and tell us about one of your stories, one of your essays.
Okay. I'm sitting here flipping through the
book.
Or two, or three. Okay. There's one here that's probably the one that was more published than any other one. This one appeared in at least a dozen different magazines and collections, and it's called Tanya's Kite. And I wrote this about my little sister. I'll read just the ending of it. I'll tell you this. The story is about the time when we were kids. My little sister had a big pink kite that she got for her birthday, but her birthday was in January, would have been a couple of days ago. And she had to save it till the springtime weather. When that happened, she got it out and got her big old kite and put it up in the sky, and it was flying beautifully. But she wanted more string. So I happened by at the time, and I went in and got a roll of string for her, and she tied that on, let that roll out, and then she wanted more string. And then neighborhood kids started gathering around, and one thing led to another, and she put that thing out there so far that we couldn't even see it anymore. It was just a sky, just string going up into the sky. You know, and I'm thinking, man, this is going to break any time. There's no way it can handle that kind of stress. But at any rate, so she did get that kite all the way back in again. And it took like about an hour and a half to wind that thing in. And then I finished the essay with this. I don't know what happened to that kite. Our time with such ephemeral toys is inevitably short. Many are put away and forgotten, others broken or lost to those hazards that lurk at the fringes of everyday life. A few even manage to break free, never to be seen again, hopefully continuing their journeys on their own terms in their own time. In the coming years, we learn to mark the advent of spring with Tanya's launch of each new kite. Sunny days offering brisk breezes would surely find her clutching a roll of twine, eyes to the distance, a rag-tailed flyer dancing against that vivid backdrop of blue. But even little girls grow up, and Tanya started having to fit her picnics and campouts and kite flying jaunts between the demands of a busy career. We especially cherished those rare trips to visit our parents at their home on a lake in the mountains. We'd go boating with Dad, and she'd lean out the bow, eyes closed, her arms catching the wind. We'd feed geese with Mom, and Tanya would gaze wistfully in as eventually, inevitably, they would fly off to disappear against the blinding blue sky. And she would cajole me into hiking with her to the natural bridge, climbing ridges until we towered over the valley, then pausing to watch cascading waterfalls crash into stair-step pools below. She always stood at the precipice and tilted her face up to the sun, and at those moments I knew that if I could give my sister anything in the world, it would be a magnificent pair of wings. I'm flipping the page here. Give me a second. But like all seasons, spring times must pass, and when Tanya was 28 years old, one of those hazards lurking at the edges of everyday life proved too much. The sun had set on a bitter winter day, and in the darkness, her car skidded across a patch of black ice. The strain broke that night, and I lost my little sister, a beautiful young woman who loved animals and people, a little girl who never gave up, the magically buoyant soul who always found her wind. Hundreds attended her funeral, a tribute from those lucky enough to have known and loved her. I don't think that warm spring day when she decided to fly her pretty pink kite was mentioned. So much had happened in the years since, too many poignant moments to recall. She was buried there in the cemetery with the manicured lawns close to the chapel and turtle pond, where geese gathered to stand sentry over loved ones lost where her pink kite had once flown over. Some say death is a part of living, not a moment to fear. Hopes and dreams, no matter how big or small, give us the impetus to reach. There will always be risks and hazards inherent in all we try to achieve, in every place we venture, whenever we dare to share, and in those times we test the boundaries to see, if only for that moment, how it feels to soar. I'm proud that my sister always lived on her own terms, never afraid to play out a little more string, eternally reaching for the sky. I miss you, Tanya, and that never changes as the years breeze ever faster by, even as the spring times come and go, and that inexorable reaffirmation of life. Your only tethers to this world now are the memories twined among the people whose hearts you touch, each contributing another role. I'll never let go of my end, so you fly as high and as far as you ever imagined. Bathe the world in your sunshine, and my love will be your wind. Gee, that's kind of hard to read, even after all these years.
Yeah, I think that's probably the first thing I ever heard. You actually read that when we were you were doing the creative writing class. You read that to us students. This is probably 21, 22 years ago.
Wow.
1999. And I remember that was the first thing that you wrote that I heard, you, because you read it. And then it was just, right, I got to hear some more from this guy. And then that's when you started bringing me some of your manuscripts and things like that. It's like, wow, okay, there's potential in writing. And that made me even more excited, you know, hearing from your experiences. And now this is like all of your books, they're published through Fresh Ink Group. Give us a little background on Fresh Ink Group, how this came about, because now I'm part of it, and I'm just like totally grateful that this platform is here.
Well, as it mentioned in my bio, it started out as just literary management, because I had an agent and I had two book contracts, and it was starting to get into rights and, you know, lots of other things. And I was working like 15 jobs plus had some pizzerias and other stuff all going at the same time. So I hired a person in Texas named Ann Stewart, who we lost a few years ago and who we all still miss and think about often. Yes, we do. And we were joking about her today. in a good way. But at any rate, so I hired her to run this as literary management and just take care of all the logistics and stuff like that. And then a couple of friends wandered in, including Mr. Weeks here. So we started doing literary management for several authors, and then a couple more were interested. But in the meantime, I lost a book contract that had gotten sold to a new company in Canada. And I had put out the first two books, and I had another one in the contract that I was supposed to write. And then this company in Canada killed the contract. And I found that rather annoying. I don't know about you writers out there in the audience, but that was not cool. So that got a little bit annoying. And then I kind of cast around. I got a different agent, found a different publisher. And I just didn't like the way things were done. You know, they would print like 5,000 copies of a book, and people I knew all across the U.S. or especially around the world couldn't find the book. And it's like, geez, when your own friends and family can't buy your book, that's a problem. So we did a segue and brought in a couple more people. One thing led to another, and Fresh Ink Group is now a full-scale multimedia independent publisher, putting out books, hardcovers, softcovers, audiobooks, all the different ebook formats, doing worldwide distribution. And now we're making the videos and doing the audiobooks with sound effects and music and doing graphics and planning tours and just doing all kinds of cool stuff. So we stay busy.
And doing this show once a week. So you've got that now. Just another angle, so to speak, for kind of getting word out there for authors and whatnot and for Fresh Ink Group. Okay, so been there, noted that. Available at Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, pretty much anywhere online that sells books.
Yeah, and there are 54 essays in this book, so it's not a lightweight book. There's a lot of stuff in here, and there's only a few that are, you know, kind of heartrending like that one that I just read. Most of them are funnier, poignant, or have some little lessons.
You'll get a lot of chuckles out of a lot of that stuff, and they're well written, and they're, like I said, you can connect to them because everybody has some sort of memory that's contained in each of these stories. It may be a little different, but it's along the same lines. So, like I said, I've read this, and excellent selection of essays there, which I've got to start writing some of those personal essays I've written too, that are in my short story collections. Those are the only essays in there, but I was inspired by reading Been There, Noted That.
Well, you know, one thing that I've made a good point of with all of my writing students over the years is that these personal experience essays are actually one of the easiest things to sell and one of the easiest kinds of works to place, because there's virtually no periodical out there that does not have personal experience essays. You want to buy say you're a bass fisherman, get Bassmaster magazine, and you know, you flip to the back, and usually the last thing in there will be a poignant or funny story about somebody's adventures with bass fishing when everything went wrong or whatever. So your topic might, you know, steer you in the direction of where you can place it, unless it's a pretty wide or general topic. But for the most part, it doesn't take a lot of looking around to find places that are interested in your personal experience essays as well.
Yeah.
I think we need to move on, Beam. I think we've got some of your books lined up here too. How about we play a commercial for Slivers of Life?
All right.
Fresh Ink Group presents Slivers of Life by Beam Weeks, a collection of short stories. A girl's hunger won't wait. A woman scorned takes matters into her own hands. Seeking peace by any means necessary. We pay attention when big events happen all at once. But everyday life comes at us in slivers. Two boys, a girl, and secrets in the woods. Young love falls short of the dream. When the monster is someone we know. Secrets from the past mirror the tragedies of today. And a young man searches for his lost faith. Slivers of Life, a collection of short stories by Beam Weeks. Read Slivers of Life in print or ebook editions, including iBook, Kindle, Nook, and more. Slivers of Life is proudly published by Fresh Ink.
So before we slide into talking about Slivers of Life, we do have a phone call. So And I believe we have some Twitter stuff too. You got
let me hit Twitter real fast, and then we'll get on the phone. Robert Willis-Croft is watching us or listening to us. He's saying, "Hi, guys. Like the show tonight." And then he came back with, "Wow, what a story." Thank you, Robert. I appreciate that. And then Ronnie Deshay, we haven't heard from her in a little while. I've got her on my list that we need to be talking to her this week. She's one of our Freshening Group authors and members. She says, "So excited I made it tonight, looking forward to the show." And then she came back with wonderful excerpts, Stephen. Beautiful. Thank you, Ronnie. And for Wayne Greenhoe says, "Wonderful passage." Thank you, Stephen. Thanks for Wayne. Appreciate you coming by. All right. You got a caller for us, Dean?
Yeah. Welcome back, Ronnie, by the way.
Yeah.
Okay. Hello, caller. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hello, my name is Louis Cruz.
Hi, Louis.
How are you guys doing?
Good to hear from you again. We've got our favorite guests on.
Thank you. I like this idea you guys got of interviewing each other. I think this is a very unique way to do things like this.
Well, thank you. Appreciate that.
Yeah. Could you tell me a little bit about A Sliver of Life?
Yeah, that's
perfect.
What we're getting
perfect
ready.
Segue.
Yeah. Okay. Let me put him on hold here. So we can cut some of that background noise, but you can go ahead and listen still on the phone there. These stories for Slivers of Life, they're exactly that. They're slivers of life. Now, when I wrote them, these are stories that I wrote over probably a 10-year period.
And this is fiction, right?
This is all fiction, except for there's one essay, personal essay in there, and that's Bigfoot was my father. And I think maybe that's
that
the one
true.
I'll talk about.
That one's true.
That was true. That was when I was a kid. There was a lot of chatter in the area about people, farmers and whatnot, here in Michigan, of all places, claiming that they had seen Bigfoot, you know, and or something that looked like Bigfoot, and it even made the news. So my dad, he was a bit of a card. He was a good guy. I miss him. He passed away in 2012, but he decided to take my stepmother's fur coat. She had this big full-length fur coat. This is back in the 70s, so you know people still had fur coats back then. And he put the fur coat on, and he had my sister take a picture of him out in the – we had a 100-acre farm back then, and there was woods back there. And he was, like, coming out of the woods, but you couldn't see his face or his hands. And just this hairy brown thing coming out of the woods. And my sister snapped the picture. It was a Polaroid. And we shared that with friends, saying, "We saw this, you know, 40 acres back." And we had one of my sister's best friends. She was like, "I'm never going back there again, ever again. I'm not walking back there. I'm not walking to your house. I have to get a ride home." And so, I mean, it was kind of fun. We kept that going for about 2 days before we finally said, "Yeah, it's just a joke." But that made it in there. Most of them are the rest of them are, they're fiction. And like I said, the stories that I wrote over 10 years, and these were just, you know, I got ideas and I wanted to, have these short stories. I didn't know what I was going to do with them at the time. There were a couple of them that ended up in other places, magazines, and I think there's a couple of them that ended up in some anthologies, but most of them just sat around, sat on my computer, and, you know, what am I going to do with them? And then one day I thought, well, you know, it'd be kind of cool to put together a collection, and I approached you, Stephen, about it, and you thought it was a good idea. So we started putting together the book cover and all that stuff. And while we were doing this, I'm thinking, well, there's really nothing connecting these stories together because they're so different. In fact, they're different genres. I think there's a little sci-fi in there. There's some paranormal. There's all kinds of, you know, coming of age and slice of life. And as I'm putting this together and looking at these stories, it dawned on me that there really is actually a thread that runs through each of these stories that tie them all together, and that is it's life, slivers of life. These are people living their lives in these, some are strange situations and some are, you know, normal, but then the strange happens. And what we think might not be connected, if you look deep enough, there's always a connection. That was kind of the worry, that they wouldn't be connected. It would be disjointed and people would, you know, be lost looking at it. What's this? You know, this is garbage. And get a bunch of one-star reviews. But people actually picked up on that, that there's that thread that runs through there. This is life. And it's thus slivers of life.
Yeah, and one thing that I really like about all of your stories, Beam, is you accomplish what I'm always striving to do, and that's try to say something with the stories, not just have a hero and he's got to vanquish the bad guy and save the damsel in distress and then everybody lives happily ever after, but something that catches something about our humanity, about life, about people, about the world we live in, and something we could all think about. And that's what I get when I read these stories and slivers of life, when I read all of Beam Weeks' fiction. So I highly recommend this book.
Well, thank you. I mean, I try to do. There's always, I guess you would call it, the moral of the story is sort of a thing. And that right there, there's this story in here called Lost Boy. And this is, I wrote this, I guess about 8 years ago. It was at my old house. And next door, we had these kids that had a trampoline in the backyard. And you would hear that shriek, shriek, shriek every time they'd be out there jumping up and down on this trampoline. And that, just that noise. I was out mowing the lawn one day, and I got finished with it, and I was putting the lawnmower away, and shriek, shriek. And it was, they had an older daughter who was, probably 12, 13. And then she had two little brothers that were, I don't know, 8, and the youngest was probably 5, maybe. And they would all get out there and have their friends over there, and they'd be on that trampoline all the time. And just hearing that sound, I came up with this idea for a story. And it became Lost Boy, and it's about this older man, this elderly man who lives next door to a little boy who is always on that trampoline. And for him, he's retired, and he likes his midday nap, and that kid's on the trampoline all the time, and it keeps him awake, and he's grumbling and groaning, and he goes out there a time or two, and he's, you know, tried to spray the kid with the water, but the hose doesn't reach far enough. And at the end, something happens to the kid, and that sound isn't there anymore, that screeching and that sound of the trampoline, and he lays down to take a nap, and it's missing, and that silence keeps him awake instead of the sound of the trampoline. So just touching on the stories having meaning, it's, you know, you don't know what you've got till it's gone. You don't know what you're going to miss until it's gone. Something that may be an annoyance, you know, for this guy, it was of a child.
Wow. You want to let Louis back just for a minute? Just
sure.
Sorry, Louis, we had to mute you because of all the background noise we were hearing.
Yeah.
I apologize about that. How many short stories are in this book?
There's 20 in Slivers of Life. 20 short stories. Some of them are really short. They're you know, maybe 2 pages long, and there's some of them that are a little bit longer that, you know, run 6 or 7 or 10 pages. Like there's something, one in here that's like, you know, 12 to 15 pages. So they're different lengths, different genres.
Thanks for calling in,
Louis. Thank you. Have a good one, guys.
Yeah.
Thanks, Louis. Okay. Go ahead.
Let's move on. Let's skip over Fantasy Patch and go to the Papala Skies. That's one that we haven't played yet.
All right. Papala Skies. This is another one that I've read that if you like Hawaii, if you like adventure, there's just so much involved in this one. This is a fantastic one. This is Papala Skies by none other than Stephen Jays.
Who would have thought?
Ooh, Papala Skies by Stephen Gies. Chicago native Rochelle DeFortier likes to imagine the future. Her world, a series of picture postcards so vivid they sometimes seem real. When a foolish mistake at 13 causes her mother's death, she's sent to a secluded Hawaiian valley, an outsider howley girl among pigeon-speaking boys who hurl flaming papala spears under the full moon to summon her mother's spirit. After boarding school in a prestigious university back east, the ambitious young woman is torn between chasing new career opportunities, discovering her mother's heritage in a remote French village, and meeting obligations pulling her back to Hawaii. On this island, steeped in ancient mythology and modern superstition, Rochelle tests the possibility of sharing pieces of her life with those whose beliefs she barely understands and never intends to embrace. She dives the depths of a pristine coral lagoon, conceals bodies in a subterranean lava tube, and challenges the eruptions of a living volcano, even as she deciphers the truth about her mother's death and struggles to satisfy new debts born of old betrayals. Papala Skies is the story of a young woman who makes all the right choices, only to find herself living an unexpected life. It is about the need to belong and seeking one's own version of truth amid such differing cultures' responses to wrenching loss and abiding grief. It is about yearning for a sense of place, yet having to confront new ways to honor the love of family and friends. Will Rochelle lose what matters most? Or might she learn what the smart octopus already knows? Papala Skies by Stephen Gies. Proudly published by the Fresh Ink Group.
All right, so first and foremost, where did the idea for this come from? You're not Hawaiian. So where did this come from? I mean, because it's a fantastic book, and throw this in again. As I read it, I mean, you write vivid. The descriptions are vivid. You feel like you're there. I've never been to Hawaii, but it feels like I visited. So where did the idea come from?
This one had a really strange provenance. I had been working on a story for a while in my head about two young guys in the suburbs of Ohio. And one of these two friends, very close friends, wound up with some serious medical issues that were not going to turn out well for him in the long run. And it was the story about how this friendship would learn from each other, support each other, and do all of these kinds of things. You know, friendship is always an important element in a lot of my stories, because I think it's an important element in life. But I kept playing with this story idea and liking what I was doing, and one of them wanted to be an astronaut, but the sick one was never going to do anything beyond just trying to survive for the last of his time. So the other one found ways to help him imagine that he was traveling in space. And I thought, well, that's a pretty cool idea. But a good friend of mine, an excellent writer who I call Loki, was talking to me about it one day, and he said, well, you know, tell me the story. So I just kind of laid out a quick synopsis for him. And he said, yeah, that, you know, I really like that story, except, you know, Ohio is boring and suburbs are boring. No offense to you people in Ohio. And I grew up in the suburbs. But he said,
as did
you
I.
Know, put it somewhere else, you know, make it visually exciting. So I said, wow, that's not a bad idea, you know, and I started thinking about, well, where could that be? And he said, well, you know, you're a hardcore scuba diver, love traveling to islands and exotic places and things like that. Why don't you put it scuba divers instead of dreaming of being astronauts? So when I moved the story to Hawaii, it opened up for me. It just opened up. Then all of my loves about diving and spending time underwater, and I'm telling you, if you're not a scuba diver, you'll never understand. You go down there, you're weightless. And I used to do open water diving in spectacular places like the Cayman Islands and the Bay Islands and Roatan, places like that. And you know, the wildlife isn't afraid of you. The octopus will come up, check you out, and, you know, it's just a
shark
different
will
world.
Come up and take a hunk out of you.
Well, I've had one do that once, but he didn't take a chunk. He just looked at me, smirked, and then swam away. But when I started thinking about some of my other things that I like the diving and being part of that natural world and that feeling you get, it came together for me. So then I thoroughly researched Hawaii. And the odd thing about that is to this day, I have still never been to Hawaii. And I still get fan mail every now and then from people who say, we were on the big island of Hawaii last month and we went looking for that valley and it wasn't there. We couldn't find it. And it's like, well, it's because I made up the valley and put it in between two real places. So, you know, we have fun and we come up with stories and ideas and we think about different ways to tell those stories, different characters that can play them out. And this one for me was an example of there was really something important I wanted to say about friendship, love, compassion, and trust and things like that. And when I put it in Hawaii and learned how to speak Hawaiian, I actually did. Read 3 books on it and spent some time on it, and then had to learn how to speak Pidgin Hawaiian, which is the way most of the rural people in the Big Island speak. It just opened up that world for me, and I saw the possibilities, and then the story just happened, except for, you know, that year I spent actually writing it.
So the story itself, give us a brief overview of what readers can expect when they read it.
Well, you know, that character Rochelle, you know, at 13, she blamed herself for causing her mother's death. And that's a hard thing to lay on anybody. And it's certainly a hard thing to lay on a child. And it infused who she was in many, many ways. So by the time she got back out to Hawaii, she was this headstrong, smart woman who had the world by the tail and her future all planned out. And then discovered that when she got back there, she had a half brother from her father's second marriage, who was getting sick. And, you know, that part of the story. And they also had a friend, a young boy who lived with them named Mika. And he basically fell in love with her and when they were both kids, like 12, 13 years old, and broke his heart when she left. And then all those years later, when she came back, the two of them as adults had to work together to see what they could do for this half-brother. And there are a lot of other characters involved and subplots and things like that. But it all comes together in a way that basically says that where we are and who we are doesn't matter so much as what we do with those around us, how we treat the people we care about.
Yeah. As I mentioned, you know, I read that. It was one of my later ones of your books that I read. I think it's right up there, definitely one of your best. And as I stated earlier, the vivid descriptions, I mean, you feel like you're there among these flowers and the lava tubes and just the whole, the night scene and the stars in the sky and all. I mean, it's, you've got a skill for that, for writing vivid description. And if listeners out there, if you haven't discovered Stephen G's as an author, you really need to. And this one, too, is on Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble, anywhere else.
I appreciate that. There is a lot of description in this one. It's kind of flowery. And some people who don't like a lot of description rather just get to the plot. It's not that kind of story. I spent a lot of time wondering what would a teenage girl or a young woman who just graduated from university, how would she interpret her world about her? And that's the way I describe things. She doesn't just step out in the valley and literally describe the cliffs and things like that. She sees it as, you know, the faces in the cliffs and being watched and, you know, hearing the sounds and it giving her impressions and things like that. So I had a lot of fun with the description, but a lot of times I had to keep reminding myself, nope, teenage girl, this is how she sees it. This is how she interprets it.
Okay, yeah. And so here's a question. Earlier this week, I was interviewed for a website that interviews authors. And one of the questions that they asked me, do I find it difficult being a male writing a character from a female point of view? Now, Rochelle is the primary predominant point of view in Papala Skies. What is your take on that? Because I don't find it difficult at all, but you still have to know know, I guess, the inner workings of your character, regardless of what sex they are. What's your take on that?
Well, I guess it comes down to empathy. A lot of people don't really spend much time thinking about what it's like to be in other people's shoes. And I've always tried to. I've not always succeeded. And I'm sure some people would tell you I'm not always good at it. But it's taking the time, I guess, to be inside your character's head and think about your character's world, how your character interprets things. And frankly, it comes back down to a lot of the points that are in my G's writer how-to on point of view. You know, it's how... it's what does that person know about the past and how does it interpret history to what does it, that character expect from its own future? And all of those things all have to fit together. And if you're too quick about it and it's just like, oh, well, you know, teenage girl is going to like this. And then bam, bam, bam. And then you've written your scene and you had a teenage girl who liked that. Yet you haven't always made the effort that it's going to take to find what about that particular character is different from other teenage girls or different from teenage boys, different from adults. And again, when you go back to those thinking about their history, their past, their experiences, the way they interpret things and all of that, then I think it starts to come together in your mind. And that's part of the process of creating characters. And to me, creating characters is as much fun in writing a book as any other part of it. Except maybe writing that last page.
Yeah, I agree. And that was kind of my take on it was, I'm a writer. I create characters. Okay, I've never been a vampire.
I don't know
any vampires. But you know what? I wrote a short story that has a vampire in it. A teenage girl that's a vampire at that. So it's just, I don't know. If you're a good writer and you can create these things. And I've got a mom, I've got a sister, I've got all kinds of nieces. You know, you get to understand the female point of view, but not fully. You know, I'm not going to say I'm an expert on it at all. I'm far from it. But you pick up things. And for like with Jazz Baby, there's three different girls that I knew from way back when that are kind of an amalgamation of what that personality is that became Emily. So, you know, it's not a difficult thing to do, writing from another point of view and another sex, like I said.
No, but it does take the effort.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. If you're going to sell it and make it believable, you've got to put the effort in it. You've got to do research, too. That's a good thing. And you can even ask people, hey, you know, I can ask my nieces. Would a girl your age, you know, what would she think about this? You know, to get that kind of an understanding, I guess. But I don't do that too much, though. I tend to just try to create what I think this character is going to think and feel. And
Yeah, and then working on this audio book these past few days for Robert Williscroft, we've been thinking about what it's like to be a submariner.
Yeah, exactly.
And to be in the U.S. Navy. We do have a couple of comments on Twitter. Ronnie has added that Slivers was fantastic. Such a great collection of stories. So, Ronnie, you're welcome to post comments all you want.
Thank you, Ronnie.
Verwayne Greenhouse says, you write best what you know from by heart. And we couldn't agree more.
Well,
so, listeners, call in. 516-453-9902 or get on Twitter and use the hashtag Fresh Ink Group. We're monitoring Twitter right now. And I think we should move on to another short story collection by Beam Weeks called Strange Highway.
All right.
If you ever find yourself on the strange highway, don't turn around. Don't panic. Just keep going. You never know what you'll find. Could be an autistic young man conjuring magic with his fingers, or one girl's afternoon leading to a lifetime of loss, demon or angel, a winged man revealing his true nature, a mother's recognition bringing closure to her daughter, sudden death of a teen boy stifling burgeoning secrets, black man's guitar transforming one young boy, decades-old accident bringing a desperate confession, supernatural first love healing a broken family. Head on down the strange highway and see more stories unfold. Need a ride? This book will get you there. Catch an e-book or get on the bus with a nice print edition you can hold and keep, perhaps a full-sized trade paperback, or ride in style with your own dust-jacketed hardcover. Fresh Ink Group's got you covered. You can exit the strange highway and come back anytime you want. You see, now you know the way in. Don't be a stranger.
All right, Rod's thrilling there.
Yeah, I like every one of the stories in this book, which is also short stories fiction. But I really like the title. Where did that title come from, Dean?
The title, Strange Highway, actually comes from a highway right up the street from me, right up the road from me, probably, I guess, 3 miles down, 4 miles down. It was driving. I live out in the country, out in farmland, basically. And here's this country road called Strange Highway. And I had to go down there for something. It's probably a garage sale or yard sale. I go to a lot of garage sales. That's where I find a lot of my CDs. Get them dirt cheap. But I'm driving down there, and I'm thinking, you know, Strange Highway, that would be a name for a book. And I thought, all right, file that title away, and what kind of story would I write based on it? And one day I was finishing up another short story that I had written and put the finishing touches on it, and I put it in the short story file, and I looked at that and thought, you know, holy cow, I've got enough for another collection. I hadn't planned on it, but I had another collection. And when I approached you about putting together another collection of short stories, what are we going to call it, you said. And I'm just thinking, all right, and went through some various titles that I had jotted down, and there was Strange Highway. And it fit, because there's some strange, you know, stories in here, strange tales with little twists. Yeah, and I try to always put a little twist somewhere in there. And each of them had that little strange twist, so it fit. And so it basically came from driving on the real Strange Highway.
Yeah. Now, listeners, when you go out there to buy that, note that it's Strange, and then Highway is spelled H-W-Y, the way it was on the sign. And that is very literal, because Mr. Weeks took a picture of that sign, and that actual sign is used on the cover of the book. We cut it out.
Exactly.
That's some fun.
And that sign, unfortunately, is missing now, because they were replacing all those signs, and they took that one down. You know, when you come to an intersection, they'll tell you coming up is Strange Highway. That sign's gone now. They found that was, for whatever reason, they decided not to put that one up when they were changing out the other signs for the new ones. But yeah, that's the legit sign right there.
I'd be tempted.
6 months before they took it down.
I'd be tempted to make a laminated placard about with the book cover on it and go out there and hang it under that sign too for people to see. What is this?
That's an idea.
And a book with the same title.
That's an idea.
So these are all fiction. Are they all a variety of genres again, like Slivers? What can we expect?
Yeah. Well, there's 19 stories in this, and there's 20 in Slivers of Life, but there's 19 in this one. And one of these is also another personal experience essay dealing with my father. I believe it's called, grab the title here. Memory of a Robot. It's an essay. And that's when I was, I think, 5 years old. And this is way back in 1972, I guess it would have been. One spring, my dad decided to clean out our garage out back. We had this garage out back where he kept the lawnmower, and he had a workbench out there, and there was this little wood-burning stove. So if he was out there working during the wintertime, he could start a little fire in there and keep warm. And he's cleaning it out, and there's all these coffee cans that had built up over the winter. And there was a vacuum cleaner that didn't have the suction anymore, so it was sitting out there, and a bunch of odds and ends and things like that. And my dad, he said, hey, you know, how about we build a robot? And I was five, so my sister would have been seven, and my older brother would have been eight. My little brother would have been a baby still at that time, one, somewhere in there. But anyway, so he had us out there helping clean out the garage, and we made these stacks over here, goes to the coffee cans over here, is, you know, this and that. And a lot of that stuff ended up in the garbage out at the curb. But he started welding the coffee cans together. And by the end of it, he had this robot where the legs and arms were made out of coffee cans. And the abdomen was the vacuum cleaner. And I can't remember what the head was. But anyway, long story short, he plugs it in, and it didn't do anything other than rattle and shake and whatever. But all the kids from the neighborhood came around, and it's like they thought it was the coolest thing in the world. I thought it was the coolest thing in the world. When you're five, I mean, hey, a vacuum cleaner coffee can contraption is cool. So he had that set up for maybe a few days, and it was kind of like, you know, all right, time to throw that out in the junk. So it didn't last long, but we have a picture of it somewhere, and I've searched for it and searched for it. I wanted to use that in the book, but it's not out there. I don't know where it's at. My father, like I said, had passed away, and there was photo albums and things that he had. He lived in Arkansas when he passed away, and my aunt went down there, and she got some of the stuff, but she didn't get everything, and it's like, all right, so that stuff's probably gone, lost. But that's the only essay in there. The rest of them are short stories. And like I said, there's some weird ones with little twists at the end and twists in the middle.
I'm a fan of all of them. All of them.
These were my better ones, I think. Slivers of Life, there's some really good ones. Some of my favorite work is in Slivers of Life. But as a full collection, I just think that Strange Highway was a little more cohesive. And thing about Slivers of Life, like I said when we were talking about that, that took 10 years to write. I mean, there was a collection of stories from over a 10-year period, whereas Strange Highway was like 3.5 or 4 years, and I was like on this writing binge for these short stories, and they just all kind of came together, and they fit together like a puzzle.
We've got some comments on Twitter. Robert Williscroft is asking, did you see the green flash at sunset out there? I don't know what that is. He's got me very curious, but the answer, Robert, is no. At sunset, Beam and I were on Zoom sharing screens and editing your audiobook. So we missed whatever the flash was. But Ronnie Deshay says, you write so well from the female point of view, Beam. It's why I'm such a raving fan of hashtag Jazz Baby. And then she comes back later. Yeah, and then she says, Strange Highway is another awesome book. Beam, you have such a gift with words. Good three more. Thanks, Ryan.
Thank you. I'm humbled.
Yep. For Wayne Greenhouse says, I've done several stories as of late that require me to use an alien point of view. I think I've been lucky so far. And then Robert Williscroft follows that up with, he says, I started the second Ort Chronicles book. Now, the Ort Chronicles, that's one of his sci-fi series that we publish here at Fresh Ink Group. The first book is out, called A Tensor Matrix. It's called Icicle, and the subtitle is A Tensor Matrix. And then the second subtitle is The First Ort Chronicle. But at any rate, he says, I started the second Ort Chronicle with a prologue from an alien's point of view as he examines a human for the first time. So everybody's getting into the alien point of views lately. And then Robert Williscroft said, I met him in Hawaii. No, I've never been to Hawaii. But one of these days, I'd like to get back in the water again. Yeah, it's been too long since I've been in the water.
All right. Well, we still have a couple minutes left here, a few minutes. Let's go to your short selection, Comes This Time to Float. So we're going to play that commercial and come back and talk a little bit about that.
Prepare to think as you explore these 19 short stories by author, composer, and producer Stephen Gies. Avoiding any single genre, this collection showcases Gies' storytelling from literary to Southern Gothic to coming of age, allegory, humor, and even fantasy, all finessed to say something about who we are and what we seek. Some of these tales have been passed around for years, others so virgin they have never known the seductive gaze of a reader's eyes. Now, you can go digital, Kindle, Nook, Kobo, iTunes, Google Play, and more, or you can keep it soft with a paperback to whip out in mixed company. Or you can really show off Be the envy of your crowd with a dust jacket and hardcover. Fresh Ink Group is where it's coming from. Amazon and the rest are where it's at. Just point and click, and you too can feel the electric surge of the latest from Stephen G's. So when life's currents get to pulling too hard, don't fight it. Just open the book and discover 19 new ways of going with the flow. Because now, more than ever, comes this time to float.
All right, so comes this time to flow, 19 short stories. Where did that title come from? I've read all 19 of those short stories, incidentally, and they're all fantastic. Where did the title come from?
That title has floated around for a little while, no pun intended. Well, I guess I did intend it. That one was, it's several concepts kind of all rolled into one. I've been a water rat all my life. If it's a river, I'm getting a canoe or a raft. If it's an ocean, I'm going to go diving. Whatever it takes to be in the water. I've even been known to go to a beach and just wade out into the ocean until it's over my head and just float for hours. Let it get dark. Let the sky fill with stars and just float out there. But the main part of the concept, I guess, would be if you wade into a river, the river's pulling on you. And it's like so many things in life that are constantly pulling on you. And if that river's deep enough and the current's hard enough, there's going to come a time to where you're fighting it, to where you're trying to hang on. You're trying to keep your feet down and anchored. And maybe sometimes it's time just to let go, let the water take you and float and see what happens and where it goes with you. So I originally wrote an essay, a personal experience essay, called that. And I was inspired to write that essay while I was listening to a Peter Gabriel song called The Washing of the Water. And he talked about wading out and how hard it was when his feet wouldn't touch the ground anymore. And I just, kind of played with that concept in my mind a little bit, wound up writing the essay, and it got published in two different places. And then I kind of put that essay aside and really didn't do anything else with it after that. But the title, I own the title. If you can own a title, you can't copyright them. But I just kept thinking about that. And when I started putting this collection together, then I wrote a short story and I used that title for the short story. And it's about a woman who, when she was a child, she used to travel with her family to this place and they would camp out with these cabins and there was a river there. And across the river one summer was another family, and they had a boy. And this girl and this boy started spending their time together, and he taught her how to ride a river. See, if you're in a canoe and you get in the water, and it's a hard river, or if you're rafting, and you're in class 4, class 5 white water, and you come out of the raft, first thing you have to do is face downriver, put your butt down, put your legs out in front so they become shock absorbers so you can bounce off rocks and push off things. And then you put your hands down below your butt so that you can keep yourself from crashing into stuff that might come up from the bottom. It's just survival. I'm in the water. I'm out of control. I'm not going to have any choice but to ride this thing. And boy, since I wrote that story, there's been a whole lot of times in life when it was just like being in the water and you got no choice but to legs out, butt down, get your hands ready, and, it's time to float. So that's what the title is. But in this case, this woman had a lot of things happen to her in her life, and she never stopped thinking about that boy and what she learned from that summer. And then when things went really, really bad for her in her life, she decided it was time to end. So she went back to that place to do that. So whether or not she accomplishes that, you're going to have to buy the book, available worldwide. But it was very poignant for me and an emotional kind of a story to write, because it was somebody dealing with somebody difficult. And again, it still comes down to that concept. Sometimes you just got to let go and just go with it. Just float. Just do what you got to do.
Just go with the float. So there's 19 short stories in there. Are these mixed genres like what I do, or do you stick with any particular genre?
Well, you know me, I never do the same thing twice in a row. It's a variety of genres. I mean, I've got some stuff in here that's suspense, and I've got some coming of age and things like that. In fact, you heard in the commercial, I gave some of the examples of the different genres, but again, they still come down to every one of these. I'm trying to say something, trying to say something about people. Like I just picked up the book and flipped open to Attention Pay. And this is about a special needs young man.
I remember that one.
Yeah, he's, you know, he sits on a bench every day on the boardwalk, and he wound up liking this young lady who's also special needs, and it's an allegory with a metaphor in it about an ice cream cone and how some people like to eat it fast, some people like to let it melt, some just let it melt over their hands. But you know, I really can't classify them. My styles have always been, if I wrote the last one in the third person, I want to do a first person story this time. If the last one was, you know, science fiction or whatever, then I'm going to do straight up literary on the next one. And the last story in this, is another emotional one for me. It's called Time and Space. And this one, a good friend of mine who's a photographer, professional photographer, sent me some photos. And he said, you know, if you'd like any of these photos, you can use them if you want to write a story that any of these inspire you on. And he sent me a picture of an old red tractor sitting in a fallow field in Inkster, Michigan. And that old red tractor's just sitting there looking forlorn. So I kept pulling that picture out and looking at it, and one thing led to another, and I started coming up with ideas, but I still didn't really know what to do with them. And then when I was teaching a story writing class, I was talking about, you know, writing in first person past tense and third person present tense and, you know, all the different combinations that you can do there. And I realized I did not have a good example of writing in the second person, where the story is about you, the reader, in the future tense, about what's going to happen to you, the reader. I couldn't find a good story to show the class, so I wrote one. And that one's called Time and Space, and I put that as the last story in the book, because I think it speaks to something that no person ever is not going to have to deal with, you know, and that's losing family. And in this case, it's the story of a young woman who's dealing with what's about to happen to her and to her family. And that forlorn tractor sitting in the field, of course, is a metaphor, because I've never met a metaphor that I didn't like.
You like to write those stories that say something. I think those are the best kind. I mean, I've read some, you know, I guess you could call them fluff pieces from through the years, books and short stories and all that, and they were fun reads. But telling a story, and there's, you know, there's your metaphors in there, as you say, and everybody can grasp a hold of that, and it means something to them, much like the personal essays. There's a connection there, and I think that when you connect with a reader like that, where they can say, yeah, this, I remember this in my life, or I'm going through that right now, or whatever, I think that says a lot. I think, to me, those are my favorite authors that do that, that connect with, you know, maybe they didn't intend to, but they did. You're saying something.
Yeah, otherwise, storytelling doesn't appeal to me quite as much if it's just, you know, putting together a fun plot and getting it out there. The one time that I did that, like with the book Fantasy Patch, it was a media thriller. Again, I couldn't just stick to the plot. I had to keep trying to find the ways to put that stuff in there. And that comes down to, I guess, if you like that, then maybe Stephen Gies is somebody you should be checking out. And if you don't, then, you know, move on. There's a lot of other good writers out there. Many of them at Fresh Ink Group, found at freshinkgroup.com.
Definitely. All right. Well, we are just about out of time. We're a little over time. But this has been a lot of fun coming on here and getting to talk a little bit about what we do as writers. Because, you know, we're this is show 26. And for 25 episodes, we spoke to, other authors and what's their work about and how did they put it together and all that. And it's kind of fun being able to share our own experiences with the listening audience.
Now, on Twitter, Robert Willis-Croft clarified, he says, if the sky is clear in Hawaii, just as the sun disappears below the horizon, if you are lucky, you can see a bright green shaft momentarily appear above the horizon. I've read that before, but again, I've never been there, so I wouldn't know. But when I get there, Robert, I'm going to watch for it.
All right. Yeah, I see also over here on Twitter, Verwayne Greenhouse said, great show, gentlemen. And I see off to the side, Cloris Leachman has passed away. Died at 94. She had a good life.
Comic genius.
She was just, yeah, comic genius, but she had, she won her Oscar for a very serious role. And that was, I believe that was Last Picture Show. And I've seen that movie several times, and she was just solid in it, because by the time I saw it, mid-70s, she was Phyllis on first on Mary Tyler Moore, then they spun her off into her own show. But, you know, we're seeing that a lot with a lot of these older actors and actresses. And, you know, Betty White just turned 99.
Yeah.
She's still out there doing her thing. But I just thought I would throw that in there because it's right there in front of me. And
yeah,
she was, and like you said, comic genius.
If you're going to mention Cloris, you got to mention
Young Frankenstein or Bad Santa.
Yeah, yeah. 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 She was great. She was one of the greats.
She was an elderly woman when she did Bad Santa, and she still had her comic chops. But
yeah,
Young Frankenstein, that's a classic masterpiece.
So as Beam mentioned, we're well past our allotted time. We always put a little extra half hour on there just in case our guests, just want to keep going and we can't stop them. But I guess it's time to end this mayhem. Thank all of our listeners tonight for listening in, for helping us spread the word. Thank for Louis for calling in, and to thank for everybody who joined us on Twitter.
Yeah, thank you, Louis. Always good to hear from you. You're always welcome to call in, as are all the other listeners. Thank you, Ronnie. Good to hear from you again. And Verwayne, always out there. And Robert G. Williscroft, thanks for calling in. And we will see you again next week. Still working on a guest, but we'll have one by showtime, so don't fret. Enjoy your Wednesday, everybody.
Thanks. See you next time.
You've been a part of Voice of Indie, a production of Fresh Ink Group. Spread the word, support our guests, then find us at freshinkgroup.com and be sure to hashtag Fresh Ink Group.